The Goswamis carried out the preaching work of devotional service on the basis of an analytical study of all confidential Vedic literatures. This was in compliance with the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Thus, one can understand the most confidential devotional service of Vrindavan. Purport by His Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, this proves that bona fide devotional service is based on the conclusions of the Vedic literature. It is not based on the type of sentiment exhibited by the Prakrita Sahajyas. The Prakrita Sahajyas do not consult the Vedic literatures, and they are debauchees, women hunters, and smokers of ganja. Sometimes they give a theatrical performance and cry for the Lord with tears in their eyes. Of course, all scriptural conclusions are washed off by these tears. The Prakrita Sahajyas do not realize that they are violating the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who specifically said that to understand Vrindavan and the pastimes of Vrindavan, one must have sufficient knowledge of the Shastras, Vedic literatures. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 2nd Chapter, verse 12, Bhaktya Shruta Gritaya. This means that devotional service is acquired from Vedic knowledge. Tatshradha Dhanaha Munaya. Devotees who are actually serious attain bhakti, scientific devotional service, by hearing Vedic literatures, Bhaktya Shruta Gritaya. It is not that one should create something out of sentimentality, become a sahajya, and advocate such concocted devotional service. However, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur considered such sahajyas to be more favorable than the impersonalists, who are hopelessly atheistic. The impersonalists have no idea of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The position of the sahajyas is far better than that of the Mayavadi sannyasis. Although the sahajyas do not think much of Vedic knowledge, they nonetheless have accepted Lord Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, they mislead others from authentic devotional service. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagna Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Savitam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagna Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Is everybody tired? The energy feels a little bit, you know. Hopefully we'll be able to enliven everybody this morning. This is a really nice verse. The Goswamis carried out the preaching work of devotional service on the basis of an analytical study of all confidential Vedic literature. This was in compliance with the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Thus, one can understand the most confidential devotional service of Vrindavan. Okay, can you guys put your phones on silent if you haven't already? Or at least vibrate. If that's okay. Who here has read the CC? Okay. Anybody here unfamiliar with what a sahajya is? Well, you all know? You don't know what a... You think so? Okay. I mean, essentially, if any of you have traveled to India, or if you haven't, you will come across... you don't really get sahajiyas in the West so much, but in India you will find personalities, particularly in the holy dhams, who have likely had contact with Krishna consciousness from birth and have been around Krishna consciousness in some sort of a form, either it's been passed through generations, or they've learned through a family guru or something, but they've taken it in a very cheap way in that they're displaying very... what Prabhupada describes here as almost feigned or fake symptoms of ecstasy. So based on Shastra, they're mimicking what would be considered natural symptoms of ecstasy and love for Krishna. But they put it on to show that they're very advanced. So Prabhupada's really chastising this attitude. On the one hand, saying that, you know, this is a very cheap version of Krishna consciousness. Because actually, our understanding is our relationship with Krishna is so intimate, so deep. The more intimate... and the more aware we become of that intimacy, one would want to keep that relationship more private. And that's actually our understanding from Shastra. As one becomes more advanced, you try to hide your devotional service. You try to hide your accomplishments. You try to hide your advancement. And we have the Sahajas very much having that on display. This is also, Sahajism isn't particularly specifically described as a neophyte activity, but you can see something similar in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness. When we first start, we're very, very keen to get acknowledgement for our ability to connect Krishna, the service that we do. But actually, as our devotional service and our relationship with Krishna deepens, because that in itself becomes much more satisfying, we are looking less outwardly for acknowledgement, for appreciation, and for praise. But what I really wanted to, you know, focus on with this particular verse is that, you know, it's being described that on the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Goswamis, they gave us devotional service based on an analytical study of the Vedic scriptures. So this, for me, you know, I was just here just a month ago, and it was a completely different verse, completely different book. We were speaking from Srimad Bhagavatam, and the very last point the class ended on was this principle of reading. It's so important to read and to keep our intelligence spiritualized. And we're getting a direct order here based on Srila Prabhupada's recommendation, Lord Chaitanya's recommendation, and the activities of our acharyas, of the Goswamis, that actually they're following this principle. Even they're pure devotees. They're following the principle that, okay, well, we're pure devotees. We completely love Krishna. And yet, to teach others, we will still make sure that it is all based on the analytical study of the Vedas, because this knowledge is so essential, not just for coming to Krishna consciousness, because most of us who are sitting here, first thing we, you know, had to do was hear about Krishna consciousness, right? Before we did anything else, before we started perhaps chanting, before we started reading, before we started associating with devotees, before we even developed any faith, we had to hear something about Krishna. So it's essential in the beginning of our Krishna consciousness. It's essential to remaining in Krishna consciousness and essential to progressing. So Shastra is timeless. It's stageless. It doesn't matter if you're Kanishtha, Madhyam, Uttam, so beginner, medium, intermediate, or advanced devotee, reading is essential. Why is it so essential? So reading, or the Shastras, you know, reading is synonymous with hearing. What are we doing when we're reading? We are hearing from the pure devotee. Yes, we're hearing about Krishna's name, form, quality, pastimes. We're hearing about his associates. We're hearing about the acharyas, the other people in our parampara, what people, sadhus, saints before us have done. And of these days, scripture is very minimized, right? Not just in any particular faith, but globally, there's this emphasis on, oh, I want to find my way with God. Okay, I want to find my spiritual path. And scripture and institutions make things dogmatic. Actually, they don't. If anything, they give structure and facility. If we buy into the dogma, if we are controlled by dogma, then we have to also be checking in and seeing, okay, well, what is it that I'm putting emphasis on when I'm following my spiritual path? Because if you look at it, any system of education requires some structure. And it requires books, it requires knowledge, it requires some authority. You don't go to the University of blah or the University of Nowhere and the University of No Teacher. There's no such thing of the University of Nowhere and the University of No Teacher, right? Would you take great pride if someone said, oh, where did you get your education from? I went to the University of Nowhere. Oh, who was your teacher? Oh, my teacher was the professor of no one, you know? So nobody takes pride. We need this. We need to know, where is our knowledge coming from? Okay, who is teaching it? And how successful is the person who's teaching it in applying it? So we have pure devotees here who are 100% successful in applying scriptural knowledge and realizing scriptural knowledge, giving us devotional service based on that knowledge. Okay, so this knowledge is essential. It provides us a framework, a paradigm, or a vision for an absolute understanding of ourselves. We're all looking to know about ourselves, right? Whenever I do talks outside, people always say, oh, can you fit in something about personalities? Everybody wants to know their personality. Who am I? What am I like? You know, we like it. And when somebody does any kind of talk which makes us go, yeah, that sounds like me, we suddenly become so fascinated. Yeah, you know, really connected with me, Prabhu. That's really sounded like me. So we want, but what we get from Shastra is a absolute paradigm about ourselves. One which is independent of time, place, and circumstance. We also get an understanding of our function, our role in this world and beyond. We get a framework for the world around us. Yes, you read Bhagavad Gita, modes of material nature. Why does Krishna spend so long telling Arjun about the material world? Because we live here. We have to know how to operate, right? Don't most of us spend a lot of time trying to figure out, as a devotee, how do I function here? How do I fit in? Not just within the temple community, but with the outside world. So that's there in Shastra too. We understand the world around us and our relationship with Krishna, with the world around us, and with ourselves. You know, as we start to get a clearer idea of who we are in an absolute sense, and who we are in terms of our function here, we need to kind of find some way of balancing the two. Yes, am I giving enough time to my eternal identity? And am I also cultivating, you know, the vehicle, the temporary identity I have in this lifetime in such a way that it's facilitating the internal? And the thing is, it would be actually quite immature for us to say that we don't need a framework, that we can, because God is powerful, because Krishna is powerful, just by sincerity, I can connect with him, and that is enough to keep me going in spiritual life. That's true. Krishna is so powerful that by sincerity, he can completely pick us up and take us in his loving embrace. But we have this thing called the mind. Okay, so we're not always sure whether what we're feeling in the beginning is pure sincerity from a very spiritual place, or it's a temporary fleeting sentimentality. So we cannot just rely on that. And, you know, this framework, we seek it naturally. If we don't get it from Shastra, we will seek it somewhere else. Yes, there are devotees, old and new, you know, who have, and not just devotees in Krishna consciousness, anybody, I come across lots of people following different paths who will look outside of scripture for tools to help with struggles in day-to-day life. And it's normal. You go to the doctor if you need medicines. You know, you go to the greengrocer for your groceries. You might go to a marriage counselor if you're struggling in your relationships. That's normal. That is fine. We're looking for a framework. The thing is, what are these frameworks part of? Are they in the context of also our eternal identity? So this reading is essential because it allows us to take other knowledge and dovetail it in such a way that that other knowledge doesn't become a distraction, but it actually helps us to deepen our Krishna consciousness even more. Because if you look at all the trials and tribulations we have, unless we look at them through the eyes of scripture, unless we look at them through the eyes of there is life beyond death, unless we look at them with the eyes of there is more to me beyond this body and mind, we just get entrapped over and over again in the same karmic cycles, even in this lifetime. You know, some of us will find that we will have the same challenge over and over again just through different people. Why does this always happen to me? I thought I'd forgave that person and let go of it. But often what we find is we don't forgive and move on. We just change our situation, right? I'll meet people who often describe, you know, I keep changing jobs. And then when you get to the crux of it, they find in every single job, they come up against the same issue. And they leave before they can either resolve it or the issue becomes unbearable. And after, and then they changed the job. Oh, good. Some relief. Yes, people here are much nicer. You know, the job's much better. And then a few years in, the same issue comes up again. And we find this in our services. Yes, we might move from service to service and we seem to encounter the same kind of struggle. Unless we have that vision, from Shastra, whether we're getting that through hearing, through reading, through associating with Vaishnavas, and we, ideally we should be doing all of those things. We are going to just get trapped by the emotions and the thoughts, because that's how the mind communicates. Yes, that is how that bit of us expresses itself. The mind functions with thought and emotion. So we would be, you know, it's not that, oh, emotions are weaker than thoughts and thoughts are more powerful than emotions. No, they both have their place. There are some scenarios where thought and logic is very important. There are other scenarios where emotion and feeling is very, very important. But you try to only do one or the other all of the time, you're going to run into trouble. Okay, so yes, we want to be feeling. Yes, we want to be thinking. But what's our thinking informed by and what is our feeling informed by? The other thing is, of course, it's important to Srila Prabhupada. There are so many quotes that Srila Prabhupada, you know, tells us. You know, you go to any book distribution, blog, website, class, there are hundreds of quotes why Srila Prabhupada emphasized the book so much. And, you know, and we're going to go through some more of the reasons, but, you know, Prabhupada invested so much of himself in these books. At the same time, he was so connected to Krishna while he was writing these books that he would read them himself. He didn't even think he was above this knowledge himself, even though he's the one who put pen to paper, even though he's the one who would only sleep for 2-3 hours a night to be able to give us this knowledge. You know, in his description, there's a really sweet description. He said, Shastra is, you know, these books are like a sweet doll. It doesn't matter which piece you take, it's always sweet. It's like a sugar doll. He described it like a sugar doll. It's very important to Srila Prabhupada. When we do something that is important to Srila Prabhupada, we connect with him, even if we never met him, even if we never saw him, even if you've never heard any of his classes. If you follow his instructions, you establish, we can establish a direct relationship with him. And maybe some of us have had this experience, that there are personalities in Krishna consciousness who are currently on this planet, and perhaps not on this planet any longer. But just by hearing about them and following their instructions, we find maybe we're dreaming about them. Maybe we're getting inspiration from them. Maybe when we hear their words or read their words, it has such a deep impact on our heart that it's instantly transformative. Anybody here had that experience? Right? And that moment really has a huge impact. Why else do we have to read? Why do we have to hear? Why is the philosophy so important? Purification. Okay, this is, I remember in the year 2000, Paitsitirtha Maharaj was writing his commentaries on Shushupanishad, so the reflections on Sacred Teachings Book 4. And so I had some service to do some transcribing and editing. And I was sitting there wondering, you know, how come Guru Maharaj is doing a commentary on Shushupanishad? We already have Srila Prabhupada's one. And I thought, okay, let me ask and try and not be offensive. I said, Gurudev, you know, I'm not being offensive. I hope I'm not being offensive. I'm trying not to be, but how come you're writing a commentary when we already have one from Srila Prabhupada? And he said, okay, I'm going to answer your question with a question. He said, why do we give class? Why do you go and preach in the universities? Why do you do that? And, you know, me being immature could only come up with one answer. He was looking for three. I said, to preach according to time, place, and circumstance. He said, yes. He said, anything else? I said, to share realization. He said, yes. He said, why don't we just read Srila Prabhupada's purports in class and that's it, finish the class as soon as that's done. Why do we say more? And I couldn't think of the third, because the third was something which is so important I was too foolish to realize. He said, for our own purification. We read, we share, because actually primarily that's the purpose it serves. It is part of our sadhana. Okay, so this studying purifies us. It purifies us in the sense that not only do we make a deep connection with the Shastra. Has anybody here, when you've given class, you've understood the verse and the text far better than if you were just reading it, as if you were just, you know, if you've gone to a sangha or a namahata or just even explain it to someone sitting next to you. The way you absorb it is completely different to, if, okay, oh, today I have to read the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that's on my reading quota. Just don't absorb it in the same way. So this idea that, you know, we read primarily for our purification is very important. And coming back to the mind and senses, our mind looks to the intelligence to decide what to do. Yes, because our mind is just a processor. Senses filter stuff in. Well, actually, they don't do any filtering. We just feel, taste, touch, smell, hear. Ah! They're going, yeah, I want that, I want that, I want that, I want this, right? All the time. And now with screens, it's constant, like literally constant. Then the mind says, oh, wow, wow, bombarded. Yeah, we could do that, and we could do that, and we could do that. Where do we find 24,000 hours in the day to be able to do it? If the intelligence is not spiritualized, if we're not given, you know, this term that Srila Prabhupada constantly says, that, you know, accept that which is favorable to Krishna consciousness and reject that which is unfavorable. If we don't know what that means, it's a very simple statement, but if you unpack it, there's a lot in there. Because what is favorable, what is unfavorable? On the one hand, there are absolute truths behind that. Yes, we know there's some things which are black and white. And then there's other things which are relative. And if we don't have the guidance of Shastra, we will just get pulled by the mind and the senses in those 24 million directions in our 24 hours, which we're trying to make 24,000. So the spiritualizing of the intelligence with Shastra helps to control the mind and senses. It also helps in another way, in that we're actually seeing Krishna's name, hearing Krishna's name, hearing about his form, his quality, his pastimes. Those directly purify the mind and senses. So there's no indirect. This is even bypasses the intelligence. That's the spiritual quality. You know how we often understand that spiritual potency is so strong. There are so many powers in the world influencing us, right? We have our modes of material nature. We have metaphysical power. We have physical strength. We have the power of sound. And then we have the power of transcendence, Krishna Shakti, spiritual power. That power trumps every other power. You can transform anything material in an instant with spiritual Shakti, with spiritual energy. You cannot transform spiritual energy into anything with anything material. Okay, but you can the opposite way. So you know, Prabhupada mentions this lots of times, that for those who are reading, even if they're atheists, if they just see Krishna's name contains everything, because Krishna's in every atom and molecule. He is in everything and everything is in him. So just by seeing his name, the potency is there to cut through lifetimes of conditioning, if we are receptive. Okay, then we receive all of that. We can, just by seeing or reading Krishna's name or hearing Krishna's name once, seeing a picture of him, it's like a blazing fire. So this purification happens in many ways. Through the metaphysical, the psychological, through that paradigm, you know, through that connection between the intelligence and the mind, and also through transcendence. What else do we also do? You know what Shastra means? We are never lonely. We're never alone. We're never alone. Because when we're reading, we are with those personalities who we're reading about and who we're hearing from. Who here, when they were a kid and they were bored and their parents were busy, would read? Right? You read. Creates a whole new world. You don't feel alone. You either become the characters in the book, or you become a friend of the character in the book, or you walk the journey with the person in the book. There's a life there. The thing is, when we read Shastra, we're reading about our real life. A life we actually had once, and we will always have. We're only away from it for a moment. Feels like millions of lifetimes, but it's a moment. Because if you read, anybody here read Brihad Bhagavatamrita? It's the story of Gopakumar. Actually, there's two parallel stories, and one of them is of Gopakumar, a simple farmer who's completely devoted to Krishna. And it shows his journey between... from being a sadhaka, being a sadhaka to his development and transition through the different planets, different levels, to actually ultimately coming to Krishna face to face. And that moment that they meet is described so beautifully, with there's so many layers to it, so much intensity. I'm not going to go into it so much this morning, but one of the things that really strikes me is he's only away from him for one moment. So Krishna's playing with the cowherd boys. He looks away. Gopakumar, this jiva, leaves. had these millions of lifetimes, comes back. Krishna looks back. Oh, you've come back. Krishna's that one moment away from his friend feels so painful out of love, that bittersweet missing Vipralambha, love that, you know, when you miss someone, they're almost more present than when they're present, right? He feels it so much that it feels like eternity for Krishna. And we also hear this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Doesn't Lord Chaitanya say, you know, a moment feels like 12 years or more in your absence? It's, this is the acuity, this is the intensity of that love and separation. So we are not alone when we read. We are with so many different personalities and we are with Krishna. So we can never say, oh, I don't have association. Yeah, okay, I'm not saying, oh, it doesn't matter if you never see another devotee for the rest of your life, the books are enough. But what I'm trying to say is the time we have with the books, that we have with scripture, if we connect and absorb the same way that we used to when we were kids, the same way you might absorb yourself in a novel, the same way you might absorb yourself in any other book that you've read. I mean, think about your favorite book in the whole world. There might be fans of Harry Potter here, or Lord of the Rings, or, I don't know, Horrid Henry. There's different things people read. Think about how much you get into that book. If you can absorb yourself in Shastra like that, we are never alone. Right? Aren't there some of you who have got kids or remember your childhood? Because I know a lot of adults forget their childhood. When we've really absorbed ourselves in something, those characters aren't just with us during the time that we read. Don't we take them with us outside of the time that we read? We want to talk about them. We want to hear more about them. We want the paraphernalia that's associated with them. Okay? So now this is spiritual knowledge. Krishna actually is with us when we read. Oh, thank you very much. Krishna actually is with us when we read. It's not just our imagination that he's with us, right? Don't kids have imaginary friends based on books? Oh, I wish I was this person's friend. This person is my friend. Or, you know, I want to be Hermione Granger and go with Harry Potter on all these missions and fight the wizards. But actually, what's happening in Shastra is like it's like we're being given, this is your life. This is your life, you've just forgotten it. You read, your life will wake up again. You're not alone. Okay, so we don't have a reason to ever feel alone. And then there's the, you know, these are Krishna's transcendental activities, his activities around his appearance, his disappearance. And he reassures us, okay, even if you, you know, even if you don't philosophize and can't get into the intricacies of the different layers of philosophy, but if you understand the transcendental nature of my appearance and disappearance, and this is now just pastimes, the stories of Krishna, if we understand how transcendental they are, they're not just like Superman or Batman or, you know, a temporary superhero who are very appealing to us, but nevertheless end when this life and our time here ends. You'll never come back here. You'll come to me. Why? Because when we understand that, then we think of him. But because we've been with him. When we read, we've been with him. When we hear about him, we're with him. It's a very natural, organic thing. It's not artificial. The other way reading is useful and philosophy is useful is it fuels our chanting with things other than our day-to-day worries. Yeah? Inattentive chanting, the Achilles heel of most practitioners, and the big warning sign we have, be attentive. You can do one thing, concentrate your mind on the holy name. And yes, we begin, you know, Prabhupada says, actually, the best place to start is just listen. Listen to the sound. But even listening to the sound, so many thoughts enter our mind, right? So many thoughts fill our mind of what we've got to do next, what we've just done, what we might want to do tomorrow, things we're worried about, okay? And sometimes we fool ourselves by thinking that, okay, if my worries about what to do next or what I did before or what's coming tomorrow or next week are about a particular service, then that's okay. Yes and no. Yes and no. Yes, we want to be in, you know, we want to be conscientious about our service. Yes, we want to do it properly. But actually, there is the rest of the time in the day to do that, not just when we are chanting. Chanting is not the time to plan and make our routine. Chanting is our time to really connect with Krishna as his name. And the more we read, the more it gives our mind fuel to think about transcendental topics while we are chanting. And it happens organically. The more we hear, the more we read, naturally our mind goes there. Our mind is a sponge. Okay, whatever you put in a sponge or around a sponge, it will soak it up. You use blue water, the sponge will go blue. You use red water, the sponge will go red. You put the sponge in clear water, the sponge will stay exactly as it is. It'll just become wet. Okay, it'll be clear. It'll be colorless. So whatever we fill our mind with, even if we have millions of lifetimes of really heavy conditioning, it will slowly start to be replaced. It will slowly, in our unconscious, in our subconscious, and our day-to-day conscious working mind. Okay, because if you think about it, often the things that come up for us when we're chanting are things from the subconscious, things that we might not pay attention to as the day goes by. Well, where did that come from? Oh, I don't normally think about that. Why is it bothering me while I'm chanting? This doesn't bother me normally. Normally I just get on with things, you know, because we're trying to switch off. You know, there's a big movement in mindfulness. I'm sure all of you know about it. We do mindfulness. Mantra meditation, japa, it's mindfulness. So mindfulness is one type of meditation. And actually, mindfulness is a technique that helps meditation. If you speak to a Buddhist properly about mindfulness, there's a whole science around it. Okay? It goes with compassion, mercy, tolerance. These qualities are actively sought and cultivated along with being mindful. Mindfulness is about being present. That is what attentiveness is, isn't it? Being attentive in our chanting is about being present in that moment. So if we want to fuel our chanting with thoughts other than just that which has filled the day, read. Read, even if it's 5 minutes before you sit down to chant, read something. And you know, one thing I find helpful is, you know, different books attract us. And if we're systematically studying Srila Prabhupada's books, we may be on a book that maybe isn't as juicy and appealing to our intellect or our particular nature. So what we can do is maybe have something else that is very attractive to us that we read for 5 minutes before we chant, because it helps the mind to focus. Because like I said, instant. Spiritual knowledge, spiritual energy is instant. It can instantaneously transform the mind. And last but not least, in terms of why we, you know, read, and this is not, again, this is not an exhaustive list, is preaching. We can't, it says it very clearly in this verse, you know, that this, we want to understand this confidential service, this confidential mood of serving in Vrindavan. We have to know Shastra. If we don't know Shastra ourselves, how are we going to share it with somebody else? Do we only know enough to bring someone through the front door of Bhaktivedanta Manor? Or do we know more? Can we take them further? Okay, because we can't. You can't sell something you don't know about. Right? No salesman can do that. Can any salesman say, oh, you're selling fridges. What's a fridge? I don't know. It's really nice. It's cold and you can put food in it. Okay, see you later. Bye. You don't know anything about your product. Okay? So Prabhupada would say these books are not just to distribute. These books are actually primarily for us. And it's interesting, if anybody here has ever distributed a book, the more we know about the book, the more we've read it, then there's no question we can't answer when somebody's there on the streets. People come up with all sorts of questions, all sorts of challenging reasons why they shouldn't take a book, why they shouldn't take to spiritual life. But actually, even if you can't answer those questions, when we're enthusiastic about what we're distributing, that enthusiasm rubs off. Wow, this person really, you know, really, really likes what they're giving me. They're giving it to me because they really, really like it. I'll give you a very simple example. I bought a toothbrush. It's made of silicone on the outside and it's got proper bristles in the middle and it's electric. But it's, anyway, I won't try and sell it to you. But essentially what happened was the salesperson I met, first of all, he had the best teeth I've ever seen. Okay. He claimed it was from this toothbrush. Okay. So he was an example of the result. Secondly, I've never seen anybody so enthusiastic about a toothbrush. You could genuinely, palpably feel this person wasn't just telling me, you know, for a fad that he had good teeth because of the toothbrush. He took me through his whole journey of how his teeth used to be and why he had to use this toothbrush, sensitive gums, and he was so, it was this natural enthusiasm, not the fake enthusiasm of a salesman. And I thought, you know, this person has, this toothbrush has transformed this person's life. I mean, thankfully, I have to say the toothbrush did turn out to be absolutely amazing. It is the best toothbrush I've ever used. But this just goes to show that when our relationship with Krishna is what draws people into Krishna consciousness. Our relationship with each other is what keeps people in Krishna consciousness. Okay, and it keeps us in Krishna consciousness. So for that natural affection and love we have is so important. And whilst we can say it's not the philosophy that brings people in, but yes, it is, because it's the philosophy, it's Shastra that helps us to develop that relationship with Krishna. We don't have to be gyanis. You don't have to have an IQ of 150 to understand Shastra. You know, because the process of Shastra, the way we understand scripture, it's not through information. It's revelation, right? Interesting that the last book of the Bible is called the Book of Revelations? Is that right? Right. That's where the esoteric knowledge is. I mean, Paitirthamaraj would often talk about that. It's in the Book of Revelations that it talks about, you know, the people of God and how they will wear a mark on their forehead in the Book of Revelations. There's some other descriptions that refer to, you know, Vaishnav practice. In this time and this day and age, the calling of the Lord's name. So this revelation, this process of revelation, is a matter of the heart. And we're not just talking about the material heart or the emotional heart or the physical heart. We're talking about the spiritual heart. Yeah. So so it's absolutely essential for preaching, because our heart, as it transforms, even if we've not said a word to someone, maybe we just gave them a laddu. Okay. Maybe we've given them a pakora. Maybe all we've done is served them lunch prasad. We're able to transform, because they're really happy. Wow, they've been here for years. I've been coming for years as a visitor. This person's still here and they still look joyful. Well, this person's giving me this book and they're so happy about this one small book, how much it's changed that I want to be like them. I want to be that happy. I want to be that naturally affectionate about something. It's interesting, because even this person who's selling the truth, I could see he actually really wasn't attached to how many he sold. He wasn't interested in how many he sold. He really was genuinely very effusive about the impact this toothbrush had in his life. You know, so there isn't an amazing trick to preaching that, oh yeah, you know, using PowerPoint is better, using this, you know, there's all these different presentation models, or not using PowerPoint is better, use a flip. These things don't make so much difference. They're a facility, but unless we have this natural, oh my God, I love Krishna consciousness. Unless that comes through, people, their attraction to Krishna consciousness, the quality of it can really be affected. Also, we then influence other people's receptivity. You know, we often hear, what is the dynamic that determines how much we progress after we hear or read? Okay, yes, the qualification of the speaker, that's important. Most important is our receptivity. But as speakers or as preachers, we have some influence on how receptive someone is, right? Just like you also, you're sitting here, and honestly, I feel it and I see it, that my ability to share is very influenced by your consciousness, by your receptivity, and vice versa. You see, it's a relationship. Unless we are open to each other, this exchange cannot happen. Right? You could shut down, look away, walk out, and do all sorts of things that make me start to shut down. Like, oh, okay, nobody's interested. Then I slowly become quieter and my mind gets muddled. So we have an influence on each other. We have a lot of influence. We have a lot of power. And it's up to us how we use that influence and power. You know, we don't have to get so caught up that it's only some people who can do this, or I don't know a lot of Shastra. Just even if what little we know, if we can really embrace it, makes a big difference. I just want to say, make a few last points, and then we can open up this discussion. There are some things which help our reading. You know, I talked about reading helping our chanting, but actually Prabhupada explains that chanting is our catalyst for our reading. This process of revelation is actually enhanced by chanting. We look at these nine processes of devotional service, and you know, hearing, chanting, remembering, all of these nine, actually all of them are contained in chanting. And if we don't chant all of the other activities, because chanting is our yoga dharma, because it's our sacrifice, our yajna for this age, because it is the prescribed process, the process that Krishna says, okay, if you do this, you sacrifice this for me, you call me by my name, I'll be most pleased. So because we do the thing that's most pleasing for him, it unlocks the potency of every other activity. It unlocks the potency of prayer, vandanam, of archanam, of deity worship. It unlocks the potency of our reading. So just like our reading, you know, reading a little bit can give us some beautiful thoughts that we can meditate on when we're chanting. Equally, chanting nicely helps us to understand Shastra through the process of revelation. Because chanting is ultimately what controls the mind. Chanting is ultimately what softens the heart. Chanting is ultimately what allows us to bypass our IQ and our material inclination or repulsion to reading or philosophy. Yes, we all have varying degrees of, some of us are more studious than others. Okay, that gets bypassed. Okay, because Krishna promises us, I will enhance what you have and carry what you lack. So this can also affect. So chanting is a really, really important catalyst. When we will probably find that when we don't chant, it has a knock-on effect. Or if we don't chant nicely, it has a knock-on effect, not just in our enthusiasm to do the other activities of Krishna consciousness, but it has a knock-on effect in terms of the enthusiasm that for the quality with which we do those things. Yeah, it becomes a tick-box routine. Okay, I'm supposed to read this much each day. I've done it. I've got to chant my 16 rounds today. Done it. Deity worship, done it. And it starts to feel like the most dry spiritual gym session ever. Right? Why do people stop going to the gym and keep paying the premium? Because they lose interest. There's no taste. It becomes a tick-box exercise. We don't want our Krishna consciousness to become like that. Okay? So chanting is extremely important. If we find ourselves losing enthusiasm for reading, actually, I would say look at our chanting. Because when our chanting's good, the reading opens up. One paragraph gives us more than reading a whole chapter. Because we're locked in, we're connected. Because we are connected to the acharyas. We're connected to their wisdom. We're connected to their mercy. Okay, when we have their mercy, then we are allowed access to Krishna's mercy. Because we can't access it directly. There's an interesting verse. You know, like I was saying earlier, when you read to share, it opens up all sorts of things. So I don't think I'd ever really noticed this verse in this kind of context. Chapter 3, verse 32 in the Bhagavad Gita actually talks about the role of envy in disregarding Krishna's instructions. Now, in Srila Prabhupada's purport, he focuses on more this in regards to people who don't follow Krishna's instructions overall. And the impact that this has, that, you know, it's very difficult to be saved from the cycle of birth and death because you get locked in when we don't follow instructions. But we do this ourselves in our spiritual life. When we move away day to day, month to month, year to year, even moment to moment, when we disregard this block of envy, it keeps coming up. You know, we'll often hear that, why did we leave? Why would we leave the perfect situation of the spiritual world when we had everything? Because this desire to be in charge, this difficulty we had with seeing Krishna as the center of everything. We want to see ourselves as the center of everything. Well, newsflash, the whole of Krishna consciousness is about removing ourselves from being the center of everything. So that comes up, that feeling comes up over and over again. We just don't recognize it as that. You know, we recognize envy as this burning thing that, oh my God, this person's got something that I don't have and I want it. That's a very acute, burning, strong, obvious understanding of envy and jealousy, but it manifests in many ways. And in our spiritual life, it's being explained that it can also manifest and become a block for disregarding the instructions of Krishna. Okay, and one of them being to study, that actually everything we need is there in the books. So block is envy. And last few points, how should we read? You know, what are there some things which can help us? Primarily, I think, you know, and I think there's a unanimous consensus throughout ISKCON on this, that actually if we're going to read anything, primarily we should first read Srila Prabhupada's books. Yes, we have so many books available. Now you go to Vrindavan, you can get books that, you know, many of us aren't even qualified to read yet. Really, really esoteric Vaishnav texts. And people get enthusiastic. Oh yeah, I want to know, I want to hear about Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis or with the cowherd boys or this and that. But we haven't yet finished. Ask, have you read Srimad Bhagavatam? Have you finished Chaitanya Charitamrita? You know, there are things even in Chaitanya Charitamrita that if you dive right into are so esoteric. Really, we should have the foundation of Srimad Bhagavatam first and Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada's books are our foundation. Because actually when we have that foundation, any other book we read, whether they're of other disciples of Srila Prabhupada or disciples of his disciples, or even books from outside, will make more sense. They will make more sense because they will be able to fulfill their primary function, okay, which is to help our absolute identity. Okay. Systematically, I think there's lots of, I won't go through the system, but you know, it's quite clear. There's the small books, then we graduate to the medium books and then the large books. We can do that. We, you know, things are approached systematically in any education system, but scrutinizingly. What does scrutinizingly mean? When you hear the word, you know, Prabhupada says, my book should be scrutinizingly studied. What does that mean? Any suggestions? What does it mean to scrutinize? Sorry, who's speaking? Prabhupada, yeah? Okay, so you're actually assimilating it, you're questioning it. Good. Anyone else? What to say? So not to accept things blindly. So you question. Yeah. Okay, so analyze and understand with greater depth. Okay, so you want to go deeper. That's a very nice point. Yes, actually, Prabhupada makes this point that we must question, but don't question too early. He actually does this in the very first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says two things. One, don't take the Srimad Bhagavatam in chronological order. These pastimes are not done in order. If you do that, you will get confused. The second point he makes is when you read, don't read and immediately start asking questions. Because as you read, maybe park your questions. Because as you read and you read more, a lot of the questions that come in the beginning will be answered. But he is still saying question. So he's not saying don't question. He's saying have a balance between when you question and how long you're prepared to wait for the answer. Okay? So some things will be answered later on in the text. Some things, the answer may be there, but we're not quite ready yet to understand it. We haven't yet developed the spiritual intelligence to understand it. So we park it. Prabhupada doesn't say don't ask questions. Or throw your question out if you don't get an answer. Park it, okay? We have this even in regular studies. There are some subjects, you look at children's education, there are some subjects which are age independent. So you look at a subject like maths because it's very logical. The logical part of the brain of a child or the human brain develops before the emotional part, okay? Or the abstract part. And so you'll hear often, actually quite commonly, about kids who take their maths exams a year in advance, 2 years in advance, and they can excel. You rarely hear that about studies of, for example, literature or a language. I mean, in terms of the depth of an understanding of language, where you have to emote your writing. Why? Because that part of your brain takes time to develop. Emotions take time to develop. Emotional intelligence takes time to develop. In some people, it doesn't really even properly develop until late adulthood. So same with scripture. We progress and mature in our spiritual intelligence at different paces. We come in with different levels of spiritual intelligence. So as we're reading scrutinizingly, we will be met with sections of text where we don't understand, the answer is there, but we don't understand it straight away. Park it. Same thing happens with guru's instructions as well. Bhaktisiddhartha Maharaj would often say, if you don't understand what I'm instructing you, clarify. If you still don't understand, park it. He goes, file it away. Put it in your filing cabinet. When the time is right and your consciousness is ready, it will come back to you. Okay? So scrutinizingly is really important, and it requires, there's different ways to do it. Sometimes it's hard to do it internally in the mind. You have to sit and read and question and cross-reference. So that's why we have sanghas, where we can discuss, we can question together, we can answer together. Yeah? Daily must be done daily. Okay? That toothbrush, however fantastic it is, and however, you know, effusive that salesman was about selling me his toothbrush, it's not going to work if I don't use it every day. I'm never going to have teeth like him if I don't use that toothbrush every day. So we are never going to be possessing the love of the 6 Goswamis unless we read every single day. We've got to do it. It's not just a treatment, it's a vaccination. Okay? It's prophylactic. It's there to help us progress, but also to protect us. Because as much as we stop engaging in activities which are detrimental to our spiritual life, there is a world out there full of people who are still doing those things. And we get affected by that consciousness. We just do because we're sponges. We absorb. Okay? But if you cover a sponge in oil, it absorbs less. Yes? So this is our oil. This is our protective layer so that we are protected. And then that way we can be also free and free to mix with others without being influenced and hopefully being able to influence them. This point I made earlier, so I'll just do it briefly. It's very helpful to me. It's probably the first instruction I ever got from Gurudev was read as if you're about to explain it to someone else. If you read everything as if you're about to explain it to someone else, you won't even have to take so many notes. You will remember it mentally, emotionally, and spiritually in a very different way. Read mindfully, be present. Yes, mindfulness is an important tool for us. Not because it gives us something that's not there in the Vedic scriptures, but it gives us a facility, an ability, a training, another way to look at being present. Because that's one thing that I think we struggle with in Kali Yuga is just being present, just stopping and being here in the moment. Right? Just whatever it is we're doing, whether it's having a meal, chanting, reading, we're always somewhere else other than the place we're meant to be. And last but not least, you know, it's never too late to improve. We always get caught up in this thing of guilt. Oh, I only read once this week. Oh, I only managed 5 minutes a day this week. Oh, I haven't read in a month. And we get so caught up in the guilt, it becomes a stumbling block. It's never too late to improve, okay? And you know, we often talk about hope, expectation. Things like hope for the best, prepare for the worst. These are lovely statements. What do they mean? You know, if we look at hope versus expectation, hope is very mode of goodness, whereas expectation is very mode of passion. Hope is, I'm going to invest everything wholeheartedly in such a way that I'm optimistic I will get a good result. But even if I don't, I won't be resentful. With expectation, I will invest myself wholeheartedly, being optimistic that the best outcome will happen. But if it doesn't, then I'm going to be grumpy and resentful. You see the difference? It's a very slight difference. They're exactly the same up until the point at which we choose how we are going to respond to possibly not having the outcome that we wanted. Yes, that is the difference between goodness and passion. So if we're hopeful in our Krishna consciousness, and hopefulness is not just a sentiment, it's very closely related to our actions. So we endeavor wholeheartedly. Whether you're going to stay, leave, do more, do less, do it wholeheartedly. If we live a life where every action we perform, we are holding back because we're fearful that if I give too much and I don't get back what I'm expecting, then we will never invest 100% in anything. And we will never then get 100% out of everything because we won't give ourselves the opportunity to have that. Okay, and giving 100% doesn't take more time. It actually takes less time because we get less mental about it. We waste a lot of time being mental and overthinking. And because the mind tricks us, because it tells us that, oh yeah, worrying's really good because you're preparing. But actually, worrying, all we're doing is wasting time, doing nothing, tricking ourselves, thinking we're doing a lot, right? Yeah? So I want to open it up to you. Any comments? I mean, this topic of reading, I'm sure you all have tips or questions or comments. Yes, Prabhu.